Members, good morning. We'll go ahead and call to order the meeting of the Finance and Facilities Subcommittee for September 22nd. It's great to see all of you. And just a note, please make sure you silence or turn off cell phones or electronic devices. And Cheryl, would you please call the roll to get us started?
Chair Yarbrough?
Here.
Representatives Benjamin?
Here.
Botana?
Here.
Bisetta Cabrera?
Here.
Caruso?
Here.
Taney?
Here.
Duran?
Here.
Garrison?
Here.
Hentschowski?
Here.
Joseph?
Here.
Foster?
Here.
Mello?
Here.
Mooney?
Here.
Morales?
Present.
Persons Malika?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Stevenson?
Here.
Tan is excused. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. And again, good morning, members. It's great to see all of you in our newly renovated Morris Hall here. And I'm sure you might have already had some committee meetings in here, but it's been updated, and nice to have all of you here this morning. We also have four new members to this committee for this session, and I wanted to give them a brief opportunity to say hello, introduce themselves, and mention maybe any experience with or interest in healthcare now being a part of our committee. Rep. Garrison, if you would like to, we all know who you are, but if you want to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair. It's a pleasure to be on the committee. Sam Garrison, House District 18, North Clay County. A lot of various interests in healthcare, and I'm excited to be part of the team. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Glad to have you. And you're also our Health and Human Services Whip now, too, so congrats on that.
Thank you, sir.
So, thank you. Representative Koster.
Thank you, Chair. Tracy Koster, House District 64, covering parts of Hillsborough and Pinellas. Excited to be here. I think the last 18 months has really highlighted the importance of our healthcare system, so I'm excited to be here.
Great. We're glad to have you, too. Representative Salzman.
Thanks, Chair. Representative Salzman, Florida House, District 1. I'm not going to rub that in too much. representing Escambia County. I have a huge passion for healthcare. I'm super excited to be on this committee. I do a lot in the healthcare community in Pensacola and looking forward to continue service here.
Thank you. Glad to have you. Chair Stevenson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Yarbrough, and I'm glad to be part of it. My name is Cindy Stevenson. I represent Florida House District 17, which is St. John's County, most of the north end of St. John's County. I was a healthcare financial consultant and an auditor for various healthcare entities in my CPA world life, and I'm grateful to be here.
Glad to have you too. And all the members who are back with us, glad to have you as well, and look forward to a good and productive year with the committee. So glad to have you too. So on our agenda today, members, we're going to have some updates from the Agency for Healthcare Administration on four topics. We have postpartum Medicaid coverage, which was the subject of Senate Bill 2518 in 2021, the repeal of the Certificate of Need Program, which was House Bill 19 back in 2019, patient safety culture surveys, which was House Bill 763 in 2020, and personal care attendance, House Bill 485 in 2021. And as some of you may know, there have been significant changes at AHCA since the spring. And there have been various changes throughout the agency. We will meet at some point our new secretary, Simone Marstiller, at a future meeting. And some of you may know the agency's new chief of staff, Cody Farrell, too, who is here with us today. Cody, thank you for being here. And I'm very positive about the leadership at the agency. I think they'll be great, and we're looking forward to working with them moving forward. That said, implementation of certain legislation at the agency does require some of our attention. And for various reasons, rulemaking can take some time, and I think that it's important for all of us to recognize that our role here on the subcommittee is more than just to pass legislation, but also to monitor the progress and monitor how the bills we pass are implemented and the impact the agency has on Florida's healthcare system. So today we'll hear from Tom Wallace, the newly appointed AHCA Deputy Secretary for Medicaid, and Kimberly Smoke, the newly appointed AHCA Deputy Secretary for Health Quality Assurance. Both of our presenters have great experience and positive service with AHCA, and they are here to brief us on the agency's efforts to implement several recent bills, as I mentioned. A couple of these were passed earlier this year, and two of them were around longer. Implementation of patient safety culture surveys and the repeal of the Certificate of Need program have been going on for quite some time. And again, the surveys passed in 2020, and the changes to the CON program started in 2018, followed by the repeal of the review in 2019. So it is of particular interest. We hear how these are going. And to that end, I am pleased to welcome our presenters. Mr. Wallace, if you'd like to come up, you are recognized, and I know you'll have a presentation. And members, I would ask, we'll go ahead and go through the whole presentation. It's not too lengthy, and then we'll have time for questions after that. So, Mr. Wallace, good morning.
Good morning. Chair Yarbrough,
Vice Chair Caruso, Ranking Member Joseph, and members of the committee. I am Tom Wallace. I am the Deputy Secretary for Medicaid here at the Agency for Healthcare Administration. And as you mentioned, Chair, we have had some recent changes at the agency. I've been in this role for the past 4 months. However, I've been at the agency and in the Medicaid program for the past 22 years, mainly on the Medicaid financing side of the house. And now I'm happy to be here in this role and being over the whole Medicaid program. And thank you guys for having me here today. So I know we have some new committee members today on this subcommittee, so I'd like to go ahead and just give you a very brief overview of the agency. The agency is a statutory created entity outlined in Section 20.42 Florida Statute as the state's chief health policy and planning entity. The agency's mission is better health care for all Floridians, and the agency has several core functions, including two that we will discuss today. The first is administering the Florida Medicaid program, which, as I said, I'm over right now, and the entity responsible for licensure and regulation of the nearly 50,000 healthcare facilities, and that is in our Division of Health Quality Assurance. So today I am joined by my colleague Kim Smoke, who is the Deputy Secretary of Health Quality Assurance, to provide implementation updates on several pieces of legislation passed over the last couple of years, which you have mentioned, Chair, at the beginning of this meeting. So first, I want to begin with Senate Bill 2518, which passed earlier this year and was a significant priority of this chamber. As many of you may know, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 1/3 of maternal deaths related to pregnancy or delivery complications occur in the postpartum period. Senate Bill 2518 extended maternal Medicaid coverage for 2 months to 1 year following the delivery. The 2021 General Appropriations Act invests nearly $240 million for this purpose. This investment has a potential to reduce maternal mortality rates and improve health outcomes for both mothers and their infants. The extension will also provide support, continued care coordination for both the mother and the infant through the postpartum period to support healthy lifestyles. So moving to our implementation update, I've created this chart to kind of provide an update where we are currently today. So as mentioned, the agency received the authority through the Medicaid Conforming Bill, which is Senate Bill 2518, and the funding through the General Appropriations Act. As this extension modifies the Medicaid coverage period, the agency must also receive approval from the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. The agency developed a federal waiver amendment and submitted that to CMS on September 3rd. Prior to submitting the amendment, the agency also held a 30-day public comment period in accordance with the federal law. That was a requirement. All comments were received by the agency were supportive of this policy change. So CMS will hold an additional 30-day public comment period prior to initiating their review. And the agency is also coordinating with the Department of Children and Families on the eligibility and enrollment implementation. This extension would be retroactive back to July 1st of 2021, which will align with the funding and the authority effective July 1, but back in the General Appropriations Act. Eligibility and impact of the Federal Families First Coronavirus Relief Act, which means that even though we are waiting on CMS approval to implement this postpartum coverage, you need to understand that everyone under this public health emergency that we're currently under are covered right now. And so with that, I will turn it over to Kim Smoke for the remainder of this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Ms. Moe. Good morning. Thank you for being with us today. You're recognized.
Good morning. Thanks, Tom. Good morning, members. Thank you for having me here today. As Tom mentioned, my name is Kim Smoke, and I'm the Deputy Secretary for Health Quality Assurance. Before I start today with my presentation, I wanted to give you a little bit of update, a little bit of information about myself. I started my career with the Agency for Healthcare Administration in the Division of Health Quality Assurance in August of 1995 as a surveyor in our Jacksonville field office. after in about 2003, I actually moved over to our agency's central office here in Tallahassee for a promotion and have moved up within the division since that time. And now, as of May, I was appointed to the Deputy Secretary of Health Quality Assurance. I'll start by providing an update on House Bill 21, passed during the 2019 session, related to the repeal of Certificate of Need. To begin our discussion, in 1974, Congress mandated the creation of the State Certificate of Need, or COM, programs through the National Health Planning and Resource Development Act. This federal mandate was repealed in 1987. CON is a mechanism to direct the development of new healthcare facilities into areas of greatest need. The CON process requires states to determine that there is a need and applicants to attain state approval through this competitive process. While proponents of CON cite the importance of limiting development to ensure quality care and equal distribution of care, opponents of CON cite the inability of new healthcare providers to freely enter the marketplace for greater competition and consumer choice. In 2018, Senate Bill 622 began the CON reform process in Florida by requiring the agency to adopt rules governing approval of pediatric cardiac programs and tertiary services, but Florida maintained the CON for hospitals until 2019, when House Bill 21 was passed. House Bill 21 took significant steps to reduce barriers to enter into the healthcare market by repealing CON for that CON process for acute care hospitals, comprehensive medical rehab beds, tertiary hospital services, and specialty hospitals. CON does still remain in place for our hospices, our skilled nursing facilities, and our intermediate care facilities for the developmentally disabled. As seen on this slide, the bill provided for a phased implementation over a two-year period. July 1st of 2019, acute care hospitals are level one hospitals, which would be our acute care hospitals and our long-term care hospitals, tertiary services, comprehensive medical rehab beds, psychiatric and substance abuse beds. Then in July of this year, 2021, specialty hospitals, which would include our children's hospitals, rehab hospitals, psychiatric hospitals, substance abuse hospitals, intensive rehab treatment facilities, and special medical hospitals. Since the repeal, the agency has received 28 notices of intent to construct new hospitals, including acute care, rehabilitation, and specialty hospitals. Of the 28 notices of intent, the agency has received 19 formal plans to review applications for the following healthcare facility types: 10 rehabilitation hospitals, 6 acute care hospitals, 2 post-acute care hospitals, and 1 behavioral health hospital. The agency does expect this number to continue to grow, as several hospital systems have announced a growth plans. Tertiary services. A tertiary service is a highly specialized medical care that involves advanced complex procedures and treatments by medical specialists. In lieu of the CON requirements, the bill requires the agency to adopt rules establishing minimum licensure standards for tertiary services. Until the new licensure standards are adopted, the agency must maintain the CON rules for tertiary services for their sole purposes of licensure. The agency did begin rulemaking process in 2019 for neonatal intensive care units, or NICUs, pediatric cardiac care, adult organ transplant programs. To continue with tertiary services, since 2019, the agency has taken significant steps to establish licensure standards through rulemaking, which have been challenged by hospitals with competing interests. Challenges were primarily due to volume standards or specialty requirements. As seen on this slide, the agency developed and published several drafts of these rules. In June, our new agency leadership team determined the best path forward was to withdraw these roles and assess a new strategy to build consensus and fully implement the changes in this bill. NICUs. The agency determined, as I mentioned, the best path forward was to focus on one specific role to begin related to the neonatal intensive care units. As mentioned, we first began working on this role in 2019 to establish minimum licensing standards for NICUs. Over the next 2 years, the agency published several drafts and continued to receive challenges from hospitals with opposing interest. The goal of the rules moving forward, as well as the goal of the NICU rule, is to establish minimum standards to ensure quality of care is received, not to act as a barrier for entry into the healthcare marketplace. When determining how to best facilitate further collaboration and build consensus among our stakeholders, the agency has decided to pilot the use of the negotiated rulemaking to adopt licensure standards for NICUs. The negotiated rulemaking process, as you all know, is outlined in Section 120.54 of the Florida statutes and is used for complex rules or when strong opposition among stakeholders is anticipated. Use of negotiated rulemaking was announced in August and will begin in October at the agency's headquarters. As seen on this slide, the agency plans for a negotiated rulemaking committee of diverse stakeholders, ranging in subject matter, location, and role within the healthcare setting. This competition will break down silos of hospital systems and provide balance between both medical experts, practitioners, and hospital administrators. Upon successful completion of this negotiated rulemaking proceedings for NICUs, the agency will assess the lessons learned among stakeholders for future rules. The use of negotiated rulemaking for every tertiary service rather as a use case for future decision-making. The agency will provide updates to stakeholders and the public through the Florida Administrative Registry. I look forward to working through this process with our healthcare partners and providing updates to each of you in the future. Moving into our next bill, House Bill 763 from the 2020 session, patient safety culture is the extent to which the beliefs, values, and norms shared by a healthcare organization support and promote patient safety. Surveys are completed by healthcare facility staff to measure patient safety culture by determining what is rewarded, supported, expected, and accepted in a healthcare organization as it relates to patient safety. Collecting and analyzing this data can lead to a high quality of care and increased accountability within healthcare organizations. House Bill 763 directs the agency to develop surveys to assess patient safety culture and requires hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers to submit survey data to the agency for posting. This bill does require the agency to adopt rules to fully implement this legislation. A rule workshop for the proposed rule was conducted on November 13th of 2020, and multiple comments were received. The bill requires, and public rulemaking comments support, a survey format that is based on the existing Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, AHRQ, methodology. The agency is currently drafting rule language and plans to complete rulemaking by the end of the fiscal year, pending any rule challenges. Upon adoption, hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers will report this data to the agency. The agency is currently planning to post this information on our Florida Health Finder. Now, on to our final update for today, House Bill 485 from this past session. As you may be aware, our Florida nursing homes must meet certain minimum staffing requirements for a combination of our medical healthcare personnel, including our certified nursing assistants, CNAs, and our licensed nurses. At the onset of the pandemic, the agency approved a personal care attendant program, PCA, was a training program to assist providers in maintaining adequate staffing levels. The temporary PCA training program allows nursing homes to employ individuals as non-certified nursing assistants for 4 months during a pre-survey and on-the-job training to become a CNA. House Bill 485 codified that program, providing a new workforce pipeline for the state's long-term care industry, which continues to experience significant workforce challenges. As with all the other bills that we've spoken about today, House Bill 485 does require the agency to adopt rules to permanently create this program. This drafting process to create the program is ongoing in coordination with our partner agency, Department of Health. Once drafted, the agency will initiate rulemaking to formally adopt the program and plans to complete rulemaking by the end of 2021, pending any rule challenges. As provided in the bill, the temporary program initiated during the pandemic will remain in place until the rule is adopted. The program represents an innovative partnership to mitigate the impacts of the continued workforce shortages facing our long-term care industry in Florida. Thank you for your time today. Tom and I are happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Moak.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you. Members, we will now open it up for questions. Before I do that, I did fail to mention, and I apologize, Vice Chair Caruso, we're glad to have you back as our Vice Chair. Glad to have you here. And Ranking Member Joseph. So I apologize, but very glad to have you and work with you again this year. So thank you. All right, questions. First, I saw Rep. Honchowski's hand, and then Rep. Salzman after that. Go ahead, Representative Honchowski.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it. I had a question about the PCA program. So I remember when we were discussing this last session, and I was wondering how many PCAs have been working in the nursing homes from the beginning of the pandemic through this program, and how many of those have actually passed the CNA exam?
Ms. Moak? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. At this point, we do not have that information. I'll be more than happy to work with our industry leaders, our associations, and even Department of Health to see if we can gather you that data.
Follow up? Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. It's a little concerning that you don't have that data since the pandemic began in March of 2020, and they are limited to a four-month time period until they can pass the CNA exam. So I think it'd be very valuable to have that information to see that the PNA thing, the PNA program is resulting in the CNA workforce that we're looking for. So then my next question becomes, what are you doing to track and make sure that the PNAs are there for the allotted, the PCAs are there for the allotted time period?
You recognize, Ms. Moak.
Thank you. Just to make you aware as well, you are correct. I don't have any specific data for you, but we can look at gathering that. It's part of our survey process, and the agency is the state survey agency for Florida, and we conduct inspections and investigations in our nursing homes. So as part of that investigation process, we do review staffing to ensure that nursing homes are meeting those minimum levels that I mentioned earlier in my presentation. And so if there are any concerns with the PCAs extending their period of time, we would be able to see that, gather that information at the time of a survey.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you could provide that information to the whole committee and to our staff, Ms. Moak, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Rep.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Rep. Honchowski. Representative Salzman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you so much for this great presentation. I think you guys did an excellent job of kind of painting the big picture of what's going on, especially starting out with the Medicaid conversation. So I have several questions, but I want to start with the postpartum issue, the infant mortality rate, I guess, if you will. We have a high infant mortality rate, especially in my community, and one of the ways that, we are trying to address that is access to care. And we are very excited about the ability to bring all of these new facilities in, you know, based off the new legislation and, really open that access to care up. I have one part of my district, and I know there's other districts in the state like this, where it's an hour drive to a hospital, an hour to an ER. So this really opened up the door. We've been able to open up some pop-up ERs around the community, and that's been very helpful. One thing I would like to mention, though, is the expansion of these facilities has really created a strain on the public safety community. And I know that local municipalities are working on how to deal with that individually, but it really is creating a problem with our ambulatory services, just an FYI. My focus on my questions is really on the NICU portion of this conversation. I know that when we created that access to care with that new bill allowing all of these facilities to open up, somehow a few of the entities were carved out. And I really just want to applaud you on your work that y'all have done, working on trying to create a solution for that. I would like a copy of the drafts that you guys created in 2019 and, the other. I would, if you don't mind, just to kind of see where you were so I can watch where you're going. The organization, the people that you chose on that, incredible. The thought that you put into that committee is so applauding. I mean, you really did try to paint that broad stroke and create a fair conversation at the table. I have one NICU in out of districts 1, 2, and 3 in the Panhandle. One. It's like a two-hour drive to the NICU. And when you're talking about infant mortality rate, you have no access to an ER if you need, or a NICU if you need an emergency, you know, a C-section or, whatever for your child. So that is a really important conversation. And I'm not sure if, the state is really paying close enough attention to that, because when we talk about really saving money, it really starts in the beginning, right? If we have good quality care from the beginning, then we don't have to worry about the care later. And so that NICU conversation is critical to all of us across the state, but it's something that I've had my eye on, and I've been working with my local community. So I think my only question is going to be a copy of the drafts for now. And then also, you have this rulemaking committee that I'm really excited to see. You say you're meeting in a month or two. Do you have a timeline of when you think you'll have some sort of resolution for the, this committee?
Ms. Smoke, you're recognized.
Thank you. See, as I mentioned, you know, our negotiated rulemaking will start in October.
Yeah.
Actually, the end of October, and the notice was just published. We just revised the notice, and it was published this morning, actually. So we are starting that process at the end of October. Per direction from our agency secretary, Secretary Marstiller, she wants us to move through this as quickly as possible, gathering that input from industry leaders, you know, those experts. They have the experience, the expertise that we need to move forward. So thank you for mentioning that the list of individuals that we want to include on that committee. We believe that's very important in our agency to pull everybody together so that we can come to a consensus and, as you mentioned, move forward with this tertiary program.
Right. I think
Representative Salzman, you had a follow-up question?
I'm so sorry, Chair. Just a follow-up comment on my biggest concern is the competition in the market. You know, and that's why we've had such a hard time getting this NICU conversation across the finish line. And I think the most important thing we should be looking at as lawmakers is access to care. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Before I go to Ms. Smoke, just before I go to Representative Cheney for a question, what in your opinion, or Mr. Wallace, whichever you, or both, if you'd like to answer, what do you believe were the biggest obstacles to the rulemaking? Why are we seeing it, you know, kind of drawn out like what you described today? You recognize?
Sure. Thank you. You know, just as we've mentioned before, you know, just the competing interest from the healthcare industry, from our hospital systems. So that's why we believe in moving forward with a negotiated rulemaking process that will build consensus and be able to help foster that relationship and move forward, you know, very aggressively with our rulemaking. And if I may add to clarify, our rulemaking is going to be held October the 25th, starting at 9 a.m. and October the 26th here in our Tallahassee Central office.
Thank you. Representative Cheney, recognized.
Thank you, Chair Yarborough. My question has to do with HB 21 repeal certificate of need. I noticed on that list that there's only one behavioral health care facility that has filed a notice of intent. And with the increasing need of health, mental health, I was surprised to see that there's only one. Do you have any input on why that's so low against, so it seems to be disproportionate against the need?
You recognize Ms. Moak?
Thank you. No, ma'am, no Representative Cheney. I do not have that information, but we could definitely look to see, you know, maybe where we were prior to the repeal of CON. And but at this time, I do not have specifics for your question.
Follow up. Go ahead.
I know that some of the healthcare systems have now expanded or added behavioral health mm-hmm. to their facilities, so that may be part of it. Lack of financial incentive may be part of it. So is there anything within your process that could help us more define why there's such a lack of interest in the behavioral health area where there's such a great need?
You recognize.
Thank you. I'm not sure. Let us take a look at that, ma'am, and we will be able to follow back up with you and the whole committee to definitely specifically address your concern.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Duran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Deputy Secretary Smoak. I appreciate you being here with us. I wanted to ask a question in the same area within the Certificate of Need. On page 10, it did point out that there are 28 notices of intent and kind of just went through all of these. I'm curious if you have any sort of breakdown of the geographic areas of where the locations of where they look to set up these particular facilities.
You recognize.
Thank you. I don't have that in my notes, but I could definitely get that for you and share that with the committee. The specific areas of the state, we can share that information.
Would appreciate. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. That would be very helpful for us to understand how the Certificate of Need repeal has been working. The other question I had for you was related to similar on the NICU. You had just brought up that the rulemaking is going to begin October. Is there an anticipation of when or a timeline of when you believe that will be complete and the rules finalized?
Recognized?
No, sir, not at this time. As I mentioned, you know, the dates of when we're going to do it to proceed. You know, as I also mentioned, you know, we really want to move very aggressively through this, frankly. That's what our goal is. Right now, because we, you know, did just effective this morning, change the dates, we can look at establishing a timeline and definitely share that with the committee if that would be fine with you.
Follow?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your indulgence here. I want to shift it back over to the PCA legislation and ask, I heard your responses to my colleague on some of the questions he had asked. I was just curious if, just to be clear, do we have, or within the agency, do you have an idea of the total number of PCAs that are currently working within our nursing home facilities?
You're recognized.
Thank you. No, sir, we do not have the exact total number, but as I mentioned, we can work with our partners, the associations, and others, and even through with Department of Health to see if we can gather some sort of data for you regarding that.
Follow up?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with the legislation that's passed while we're sort of working through rulemaking, mm-hmm. Any of the guidelines within which it was passed, have those been implemented within what the emergency order, or are we having to, is the emergency order different in those guidelines? It's pretty specific. What is the extent to which a PCA can provide? What the kind of care? Mm-hmm. Is that sort of in our emergency order, or are we still working on those rules?
You recognize.
Sorry, thank you. Yes, we, you know, as the legislation indicated in the bill and in the final statute, that the current PCA program, the temporary PCA program that was approved by the agency in 2020, that still stays in place until final rulemaking. And as I mentioned, with our other, with the CO, with the NICU rule, we are moving very aggressively with this PCA rule to get it in place.
Okay, one final question.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is great. I mean, we have a lot of good bills that we've passed that you and I have worked on over the past last couple of years. Back to the postpartum Medicaid care coverage extension. I know that we have an application that was submitted. We're waiting on CMS's approval. Do we have any indication or any concerns that CMS may come back to us with any reasons why they would deny our application?
Mr. Chair.
You recognize, Mr. Wells.
Thank you for that question. No, we don't. So we had, like I said, we had submitted it on the 3rd, the waiver request. CMS did come back to us with some questions, and we had a phone call with them, I believe, on the 13th of September. And on the 16th, we submitted a follow-up information back to CMS. And on the 17th, they came back to us indicating that they have everything they need to move forward. So we don't see any issues there at the moment.
Thank you. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is a little bit more broad. I understand that we have several staffing crises across our healthcare system, one of which the PCA program was trying to address. But it's my understanding that it's still bad and it's partially getting worse. Are you aware of any efforts to proactively address that? Is there anything your agency's doing, working with, I don't know, any entities to address that? I'm sure maybe reimbursement rates might be a part of that, but I'm not even sure because based on my understanding, you know, the wages are increasing, but the workforce is not. So anything either of you can speak to on that.
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for that question. Just on the reimbursement side, and then I'll let Kim talk about anything else she has here to respond to you. What you're saying, we're hearing that too. You know, we're hearing that from all of our providers. A lot of these providers, I just had a call yesterday with our statewide inpatient psychiatric centers that they're having staffing issues and whatnot. So this is something that we are definitely aware of, and we're looking at what the potential options might be out there right now.
Do you have a follow-up, Ranking Member? Ms. Smoke, go ahead if you'd like.
Thank you. Regarding the workforce staffing shortages, you know, we have been talking with industry leaders over time about the staffing shortages and the strategies that, you know, we could assist with and work with our associations on. Earlier this year, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services did approve a civil monetary grant for our nursing home association here in Florida to, you know, expand and provide educational opportunities to try to bring individuals into the nursing home workforce. I will be happy to share a copy of that grant with you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ranking Member. Next, I had Representative Morales. You had a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Ms. Kimberly? This is for Ms. Kimberly. Thank you. Thank you for providing all that information about the PCA program. But I have a sensitive question I want to ask. I noticed that most nursing home staff are required to pass a background screening before employed. Is this also applied to PCAs? Are you providing that for the PCAs to pass a background check? And do you have records of that? Would you prepare like a data in the future? I'm just interested in finding that out.
Ms. Smoke, you're recognized.
Thank you. Actually, according to definition, it's not so much the job title of an individual that works in a nursing home, it's the type of personal services that they're providing. To the PCA, because the PCA, personal care attendant, is providing personal services or personal care services and have access to the resident and the resident's room and environment, then yes, they are required to go through a level 2 background screening, just like our certified nursing assistants and our nurses, our dietary aides that work in our nursing homes in Florida.
Follow-up. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, follow-up, Representative.
Yeah. Is there any way to, you have data so that we don't have anything in the future, an incident, how would anyone that would like to hire them have access to that information?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Well, you know, our agency is the clearinghouse for the state of Florida. So as part of that employment process, then the nursing home must verify that employee's background screening before they actually provide hands-on care or work in the facility. And to answer your other question, if I may, regarding some data, regarding background screening, we do have some information that we can share, and I'll have to get that for you.
Thank you. Did you have one more follow-up, Representative Morales?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Garrison, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and Deputy Secretary, thank you for your presentation. Regarding the PCA program, I was a sponsor of that bill along with my friend and colleague, Representative Rayner, great bipartisan bill. The rulemaking process that you described, I think you said the goal is to have that completed by the end of this year. A couple questions on that, and you can answer them in whatever order is appropriate. But do we anticipate any rule challenges coming down the pipe, either things that have already been brought to your attention or just from your experience? And number two, the bill required the creation of some rules to implement. What will be the scope of those rules, and what will they specifically focus on? I know your presentation said the permanent training program. Are there any other aspects of the program that will be you anticipate will be addressed in that rulemaking process? Thank you, Chair.
Sure. Ms. Smoke, you're recognized.
Thank you. Regarding the rulemaking, we do have legislative authority that you have granted us to do that rule. So those were the areas that we will be moving forward with. Regarding the rule challenges, our hope is, in working together with our association, stakeholders, other interested parties, we will be able to move forward very aggressively and get this rule in place. As I mentioned, we are drafting a rule at this time, and again, hope to move this very quickly through the rulemaking process. As the rule outlines, as the legislation outlined very specific things that we would include in that, just to give you a couple of examples, residents' rights, confidentiality, control of contagious and infectious diseases as well, emergency response measures. Additionally, assistance with activities of daily living, which, as you know, is a major part of our personal care attendant tasks that are provided in our nursing homes, measuring vital signs, skin care and pressure ulcer prevention, portable oxygen use and safety, and several other assistance with care services that we will be addressing.
Go ahead.
Just very briefly, just more to say thank you for that, and I would encourage that process to move forward. I know a lot of folks on the committee, this was a very important bill that we've received a lot of good feedback from, both from the for-profit and the not-for-profit, secular and faith-based. Across the board, the providers are saying this is very helpful to them, but the devil's always in the details. So to the extent that that process can move expeditiously, I want to encourage the department with that, and thank you for your hard work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Yarbrough. Deputy Secretary Smoke, when we talked about the shortage of or the tension on our staffing, nursing staffing, we can't produce them quickly, right? They had a lot of experience and requirements. I had heard that one of the issues is the time that is required in documentation, and I heard that generally, that they're spending 35 to 40% of their time recording data. And I don't know if that's uniquely related to like contact tracing timing. I heard it in the pandemic committee, they mentioned it. If there's any follow-up on that, I'm just interested in that, how that time is being used. Also, in the schools that were still doing contact tracing, the ability of somebody other than a nurse to input results of the positives and then the negative testing and things like that, there might be opportunity there. There seems to be a lot of stress on that. Maybe we're moving out of that time period. I'm not sure. But I'm just interested in that complaint, that concern that with the fewer nurses, is there anything in the record keeping that could be, streamlined?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson, are you, is this specifically about contact tracing or just documentation in general as a nurse doing her day-to-day activities with caring for residents in our nursing homes?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you. The complaint, I heard it. I was listening to the pandemic, in the pandemic committee, and I did not hear the level of detail. But I've also had complaints from the local level about the, you know, that it's very difficult. I think it's the Merlin system that they're working on the, so it may be, they may be either. I'll make it, yes.
Ms. Smoak.
Thank you. Well, if you're referring to the Merlin system, that is the system used by Department of Health, our partner agency. That is not something the Agency for Healthcare Administration oversees. But if there are any specifics, we'll be happy to work with our partner agency as we have this whole time through the pandemic.
Thank you.
I'll get more clarity on that. With the limited number of nurses that we have and the burnout that we have, there may be some opportunities for maybe people who don't want to be in direct nursing to be in the background assisting with that. And that was one of the thoughts. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair Caruso, you recognized?
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Deputy Secretary Wallace and Deputy Secretary Smoak, for your presentations. You know, we're dealing with, you know, different legislation that passed from 2019, 2020, 21, and with concerns of, you know, our health and well-being of the state of Florida, the residents of the state of Florida, and life and death, you know. And I'm wondering, it just seems like such a long process to implement these laws. And I'm wondering, have we identified any areas where we can, you know, further expedite the implementation of the laws? Have we looked into that, and have you identified any specific things that we could work on or that you need our help in changing statute to make it go faster, the process?
Ms. Smoak, you're recognized.
Thank you. You're right, it does take some time, but we, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we are working very aggressively through that process, through the rulemaking process. It is unfortunate, you know, that we have been, for a year and a half in a pandemic. And unfortunately, that did slow us all down a little bit. But we are trying to move forward with that. And we do appreciate and think, you know, just really trying to implement what you have directed our agency to do. As I mentioned earlier, you know, with the negotiated rulemaking for our NICUs, we will be taking some lessons learned from that process to see how we can move more aggressively forward with the rules that you have provided us the authority to enforce.
Vice Chair, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. If you do come up with ideas, and you know, I'd appreciate if you'd get back to us, and you know, so that we can try to assist you in any possible manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Additional questions, members? Okay, I do have one more about the patient safety culture surveys. Ms. Smoak, how will AHCA enforce compliance with the bill and rule once the rule's in place? What's the compliance mechanism, accountability, all of that? And if you could speak to that.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
We will be addressing that in the rulemaking process as well. But we, you know, within our Florida Center, our Florida Healthcare Center for Transparency, that project or that survey will be housed in there. So we will make sure that we monitor that as we move forward.
And is that, as a follow-up to that, is it something that is unique to each rule that's put in as far as what certain enforcement or accountability mechanisms might be, or is there a standard process for all rules that is generally followed, or is it a mix of both?
It would probably be a mix of both.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Additional questions, members? Anyone? Okay. Very good. Well, thank you, Mr. Wallace, Ms. Smoak. Thank you very much for being with us today. We really do appreciate that, your time and the information. Look forward to continuing to work with you. And members, thank you for the discussion and questions. Appreciate your engagement on that today. So this concludes our committee agenda, seeing no further business before us. And Representative Benjamin moves that we rise. So we're adjourned. Thank you.